Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Back to Basics. As you can tell, we have brought in the cavalry for this episode, and this is fine. as usual, I am the one, the only, the you're still stuck with me, Pastor Don. I am joined by the magnificent Courtney Fraley, and I have no idea which direction she'll actually appear in the final product, but for me, she's over here. Say hi, Courtney.
Did you say Courtney? And then just try and roll with
the
it.
Courtly Courtney. I like that. I think we'll go with that.
Hi. Yeah.
Then presumably below me, but I don't know how, again, it looks on the final product. We have the one, the only, the U.S. side administrator for Unfinished Community. We have Steve Augustine.
Yeah. Hi. And yes, it was Courtly. You are Courtly. I did not, you did not miss your thing.
The fake raising the roof is, I think, what I got for breaking down and buying a box of wine for the first time in my steps to becoming a stereotypical American mother.
And this is what happens when we record from opposite sides of the world, is you're sitting there with wine and I'm sitting there with literal caffeine. I love the fact that the coffee that I buy from the Kombini is really just caffeine. That's what it's called. It's just called caffeine. Because that is what we need. So let's talk Bible here, because the three of us could waste all day talking about nothing. We definitely could. Today, we are going to lean into Genesis chapter 31, which we're going to break into two parts. We are dealing with the fallout from last episode, where Jacob decided to piss off Laban by accidentally inventing genetics. It was kind of a weird episode, because it focused mainly on weird techniques for making animals have sex. But, you know, it's the Bible. Sometimes it gets weird like that. Today, we are focusing on how pissed is Laban and Laban's family that this happened. So I am going to kick it over to Courtly Courtney.
Please don't try to make that a thing.
I can make a thing whenever I want to be a thing. Thank you very much. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to kick it over to you, Courtney, for Genesis chapter 31, verses 1 through 21. Take it away.
Okie dokie. Now Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, "Jacob has taken all that was our father's. He has gained all this wealth from what belonged to our father." And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him as favorably as he did before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your ancestors and to your kindred, and I will be with you." So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah into the field where his flock was, and said to them, "I see that your father does not regard me as favorably as he did before. The God of my father has been with me. You know that I have served your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. Is it, aside, is that true? Like, is that supported in the...
It's a minor exaggeration, which is standard to this kind of text.
But God did not permit him to harm me. If he said the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flock bore speckled. And if he said the striped shall be your wages, then all the flock bore striped. Thus God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. During the mating of the flock, I once had a dream in which I looked up and saw that the male goats that leaped upon the flock were striped, speckled, and mottled. Then the angel of the Lord said to me in the dream, 'Jacob.' And I said, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Look up and see that all the goats that leap on the flock are striped, speckled, and mottled. For I have seen that Laban is, I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and made a vow to me. Now leave this land at once and return to the land of your birth.' Then Rachel and Leah answered him, 'Is there any portion or inheritance left to us in our father's house? Are we not regarded by him as foreigners? For he has sold us, and he has been using up the money given for us. All the property that God has taken away from our father belongs to us and to our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you.' So Jacob arose and set his children and wives on camels, and he drove away all his livestock, all the property that he had gained, the livestock in his possession that he had acquired in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel stole her father's household gods. And Jacob deceived Laban the Aramean, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled with all that he had. Starting out, he crossed the Euphrates and set his face toward the hill country of Gilead." Okay.
So
that's our first, that's what we're focusing on today then, right?
Yeah, that's us for today.
Okay.
So a few things have happened here. Laban's sons, who are now suddenly important to the story, appear and are bitching about the fact that Jacob got one over on the dad. And then...
As you do, I imagine.
Yeah. So Jacob pieces out and leaves town, and that's pretty much it. But there are some fun little hidden bits in here. So before I start just throwing out the random stuff that I found, I want to kick it to you two, see if you find anything interesting.
What do you know? I usually bust this stuff out. Steve, you have any thoughts on this?
No thoughts exactly. The verse that struck me as weird was that Rachel stole her father's household gods.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I stopped a bit when I was reading.
Stopped a bit. Like, what does that mean here?
Yeah, that's one that's worth talking about, especially because, and I will continue my long-running trade of just schlepping for Robert Alter and his translation here. Buy it now. It's on Amazon for way more money than you probably have available. Because damn, it's not cheap, but it's
really
the
damn.
Best. It's like $200 on Amazon. It's not cheap, but it's one of the few expensive pieces of biblical literature that I really think is worth it. Anyway, now that I'm done schlepping for somebody who I'm hoping will like buy a promo ad or something for us, that'd be nice. The notes here that he has on his translation here on that particular point raises something that in all of the times that we talk about Rachel and Leah and that they come up in Sunday school and that we mention them in sermons is never, ever, 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 ever brought up. And I'm going to read from his note here. Specifically on the phrase, Rachel stole the household gods. The household gods, or teraphim, the etymology of the term still being in doubt, are small figurines representing the deities responsible for the well-being and prosperity of the household. Remember, Laban is...
So exactly like the household gods from the Pompeii episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah, not like this. Actually, if I can continue here to tie into Doctor Who, the very next sentence, there's a little pressure of the household. The often cited parallel with Roman Penates seems quite pertinent. It's the next sentence. So you're exactly right. In the episode, The Fires of Pompeii, featuring the 10th Doctor and inexplicably the 12th Doctor, this exact thing is what was mentioned, the Penates. So that is an apt historical parallel, thanks to Doctor Who. Well done. But this is where it gets interesting. So we have Rachel, who is the daughter of Laban. Laban is a relative that has been mentioned a few times. But his whole family were not followers of monotheism. And that's a known fact. Like, as Laban has come back a few times in the story before now, this has been referenced. Laban is not a monotheist. Yeah. So there is, and this is where something that is never talked about in Sunday school ever comes up. There is no reason to assume that Rachel would have become a strict monotheist through her marriage. So it's perfectly understandable that she would want to take with her in her emigration the icons of these tutelary spirits or perhaps symbols of possession. So right here is an indication that for all of the fact that Jacob is a monotheist following Elohim, Rachel shows no indication of the same. And so we hold her up as one of the kind of matriarchal figures of the faith, but there's no indication that she even worshiped the same God. Like, that never comes up. So her stealing...
It's also not being demonized, then.
You know, that it is not. But she did...
I mean, we're going to get around to that.
Gods. Like, you know, theft of deity might not necessarily be seen as a positive portrayal, even in those days. So how negative she's being portrayed here is up for some debate. And the whole Rachel Leia thing is also not a great look for any of them either. But yeah, so that's what's happening here, is they're, you know, kind of demonstrating Rachel is kind of still a polytheist and is kind of dragging her dad's shit along for the ride. Now, what I think, unless you have any more questions about that, I want to throw one other thing at you, because this is the thing I was expecting you to jump on, Courtney. Verse 14 and 15, I think it is. Then Rachel and Leah answered him, "Is there any portion or inheritance left to us in our father's house? Are we not regarded by him as foreigners? For he has sold us, and he has been using up the money given us." What do you think about that?
Can you put that in a little bit plainer English? Those verses. Just it's they're awkwardly structured.
I couldn't hear any of it because my internet connection decided to be stupid. So you can repeat all of that.
All right. So I'm going to paraphrase this. And this is where Rachel and Leia, who I stress are combative with each other, are now talking to each other because they're both kind of weirded out about this. Why does Dad not seem to give a shit about us? He's taken all of the money that was supposed to be ours and just used it for himself. What the hell? So some background to this, it's worth knowing, and I'm going to again read from Alter's notes.
Rachel, this section titled, Rachel and Leia Realize That Their Father is Toxic.
Rachel and Leia and the Advent of Toxic Masculinity. Okay. Sounds like a Harry Potter book actually worth reading. Let's see. All right, verse 15, for he has sold us and he has wholly consumed our money. In a socially decorous marriage, a large part of the bride price would go then to the bride. So this was a tradition in that period where like the husband would pay a dowry or a bride price, and the father would take that and keep some of it, but give a significant portion of it to the bride.
That's kind of why I wasn't as weirded out by this, because I was like, oh yeah, dowries. I understand the concept of a dowry, but my understanding of the concept of a dowry doesn't have a whole heck of a lot for the woman. It goes to the parents, right?
And this is where it gets interesting, is that it's typically that socially done that way, where the father kicks back a bit of that to his daughter as kind of a going away present. Like that is the normal expected way that this kind of a transaction is laid out.
Okay.
However, remember that the bride price that was paid by Jacob was years of service and labor, and his wages were counted as the purchase price for his wives.
Right.
So they're saying, where's my fucking money? Is pretty much what they're saying. And so to continue with Alter's notes here, Laban, who first appeared in the narrative in chapter 24, eyeing the possible profit to himself in a betrothal transaction, has evidently pocketed all of the fruits of Jacob's 14 years of labor. His daughters thus see themselves.
So this is effectively sending your kids out into the world and like not just like booting them out the second they turn 18 and not having anything saved for them. Or
it's more like enrolling them in college and dropping them off at the door and then telling them, oh, by the way, I know I told you I paid for college, but you're on your fucking own.
Yeah, that's more where I was headed with it.
Yeah. So consider this last line here from Alter's notes. His daughters.
I told you I'd have this taken care of, but no. A plus parenting.
Fuck you, I'm keeping you. Consider my earlier example, and then Dad goes out and buys a Porsche or something. Like now you're getting the mindset here. So this last line here from his notes. His daughters thus see themselves reduced to chattel by their father, not married off, but rather sold for profit as though they were not his flesh and blood. So this is the moment where it's some shit. Like, and this is from
even trying to put myself into that world standards, which spoilers for the cis men in the chat. You get used to fitting yourself into a mold, even if you're somebody like me who does not easily fit a mold. It's absolutely what happened. So thinking about life as a woman in this time period, from everything that I've been learning about it from, you know, this written oral history, it's still the just you explaining it like that would really, really sting. It's exactly how it would come across, is like you'd been sold as a slave by your father.
Double down on this, because in this period of time, women don't have a whole hell of a lot to rely on culturally that they can have expectations for themselves. This is one of the few things in a woman's life, according to the cultures the customs of the time, that they can kind of depend on. Yeah, Dad's going to sell me off to some dude, but at least I'm going to get the kickback out of it. Like, I'm going to have something. So if a man turns out to be a total dick and kicks me out by the street side, I'll at least have some scratch, you know?
A little bit of spending money will do a great deal to sort of insulate against some of the emotional pain I think a lot of us have found.
Right. I think it's no small wonder they went from like rivals to like speaking to each other as well, because like a common wrong brings people together pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Especially human nature, who, in a nutshell. For better or worse, would be as close as siblings.
Yeah, it's basically what I like to call the Independence Day theory of world peace. Like, yeah, sure, we hate each other until the aliens are overhead, and then we're all best buds. There's a bigger threat here, and it's going to blow up the White House, which kind of wish they would do that. Anyway,
hey.
No, I don't wish for death on people, but I kind of do wish for governmental structures to collapse in America. Anyway, moving on.
What we do is we take the White House and we turn it into a museum and take all of the proceeds from that and we give it to the descendants of the black people who built it unpaid.
Exactly.
There's the kind of wild idea you get out of me when I'm with friends. That's off the cuff. I haven't just been sitting on that. I'm like, God, that's a good idea.
Can we just seize the fortunes of all the primary shareholders of the NRA and do the same with it too? Like, I'm cool with that. Like, anyway, before we get too off track, was there anything else in this section of the chapter we really wanted to explore? It's pretty straightforward. Like, God theft and accidental doubling down, well, not accidental, intentional doubling down on misogyny of the period are kind of the two main things that are happening here. It is worth noting, of course, Jacob's sons kind of pop up here to move the plot along, but they have no other real agency beyond that. But other than that, well, okay, what do you got, Courtney? What do you got? I see you
just
got
a silly thing. Just a silly thing.
All right.
As I was reading, I probably smirked a little bit at a weird moment while I was reading. Chapter or verse 18 reads like the poison for Cuzco. Cuzco's poison. And he drove away all his livestock, all the property that he had gained, the livestock in his possession that he had acquired. Just, it read that way, and it made me giggle.
I think it's hilarious from an English perspective. It is also worth noting that repetition is what they did in the days before exclamation marks.
I think it's the translation being worded in this way that just makes it feel like that.
The poison for Cuzco. Cuzco's poison. The poison made especially for Cuzco. That's exactly it right there, and I do love that take on it. Another accurate translation of this would be basically, so Jacob said, the hell with this, took all his shit and rocked out, exclamation mark. Like, it's... Well,
I will say that I had... Sorry, I'm finding things to actually talk about in the scripture now.
Kind of like that's the whole point.
Where God appears to him and is just like, listen... You're not living your best life here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place for you that I gave you. Go there. I got you covered. Just go there. It's better. It's one of the moments where it's like, yeah, that seems like pretty good advice. And also, if it's something that you can actually pull life lessons from the scripture. If you're super freaking unhappy with where you've been plugging it for a long time, try something else.
And it's also as a completely interesting side note from an archaeological standpoint, in verse 13, where we start to get God kind of self-identifying as I am the God who appeared to you at Bethel, yada, yada, yada. The language switches into a construction that is based largely in Aramaic, Targum specifically. And the phrase itself suggests that what they're representing here in this communication is something else from an earlier period that is now lost in translation. So there is an almost cultural separation in what God is saying to Jacob that isn't reflected in the larger passage surrounding it. Now, if you expect me to be able to give you an answer as to the importance of this, I don't fucking know. But it is interesting that when God speaks here, all of a sudden we're getting like Aramaic of a different construction that doesn't reflect the passage around it. So like this could just be echoes of the older oral histories. This could be other cultural influences. It could be any number of things at play here. But when God speaks, shit gets weird. It's kind of a theme we've been dealing with for a while. All right. So do you guys got anything else that you want to tear at here? Steve, you've been unnaturally quiet this time. I'm sure you've got something else you might want to throw at us.
Well, I mean, I don't see a whole lot that jumps out at me as being strange. I pointed out the bottom about stealing the household gods. We covered that. The earlier verses just talking about the striped and the speckled sounds like Laban pulling a bait and switch sort of thing constantly.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you've got that interplay between, like, Laban has been kind of bait and switching Jacob for a while here. Although, side note,
I mean, that's what the original first marriage was, right?
Yeah, but to be fair to, I guess, Laban in this case, or at least to the women, like, how do you take a bride, take her home, have sex with her, and then wake up the next morning and realize it was a different person? Like, Jacob is not the sharpest knife in the spoon cabinet.
There were no electric lights, and almost every man I've ever met wants to get their dick wet.
Yeah, like, there's a level of stupidity there that I find inexcusable. But we talked about that a couple episodes back. In any case, Laban seems to be very much taking advantage of the simplicity. And this is an interesting point to consider, too. Laban's history is taking advantage of the naivety and indeed stupidity of Jacob. But Jacob hits back at Laban by being smart, and Laban can't fucking have that. So Laban's anger, which we're going to talk about in the next episode, seems to be rooted, to me, almost as much in the way he responded, with, like, straight up genetics and animal husbandry, which you wouldn't expect from a guy who's too dumb to tell sisters apart at night. Like, so there is that interplay. But we'll get
alternately, maybe he just didn't care all that much.
I mean, you know, men with respect to women in any age, let alone in the ancient patriarchies. So
7 years, a pretty big price to pay for it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, 7 years or 18 years.
Just saying.
So anyway,
yeah.
Unless we got anything else to tear on, let's go ahead and draw this to a close here. You know, we will have a lot more to say about Laban and his insanity in the next episode. And so if you sat with us for this long, join us next week for said next episode, where we talk about Laban and his anger and what he does as a result and how screwy that all gets. But in the meantime, join us in our Discord server, please. What with the stuff is happening. Courtney even created a whole bunch of new threads just today, which are kicking off and are fun and are geek related. We're having lots of good conversations, and it's
awesome. I'm trying to make more space for us to have just, like, conversations, regardless of whether they're about God, because I feel like that's something that makes a church space feel comfortable to me. Absolutely. Is where I can talk to the other people in the church about stuff other than the Bible.
Right. And that's something that, if y'all are listening and we're closing in on 50 episodes here, and you've heard me talk about the Discord for that many episodes, it's not just a sit and talk about church stuff. Like, this is a social environment. We fellowship with each other. We share our lives and our hopes and our dreams and our prayer requests. And yes, we do talk about the Bible a hell of a lot and how screwy it is, but we also talk about geeky stuff. Like, if you want to listen to me freak out about the upcoming, when we're recording this anyway, finale of Star Trek Picard, this is the place you're going to want to be, because I can guarantee you by the time this episode comes out, I'm going to have some thoughts on that.
Oh, I actually just created a shitposting channel.
Yeah,
because exactly. It's fun.
Thing what we do.
And sometimes some of my memes, I think, are a little too spicy for not general images. We don't have
and
that
if
here.
That's not enough.
We're
for
working
you
on refining the social aspect of it and making it a comfortable, fun space for people. So
the Christianese word that we use for that is fellowship. That means geeking out with each other about that. And if that's not enough for you, also Steve is there.
Yes, Steve is totally there.
Yes, because we like Steve. He is our friend.
Watch my hand disappear in and out of the flames here.
It's fine.
This is fine.
It's still fine. It's still fine.
Everything's fine.
So in the meantime, the one ask we do have for you is the one thing that I defer to Courtney's expertise on every week.
Yep. Like, share, and subscribe. Please comment. And see you next time.
Yeah, see you next time on another fun, footloose and fancy free episode of Back to All Dem Basics. Yo, bye.
Bye.